Welcome back to another episode of the Working on Wellbeing podcast by the World Wellbeing Movement, the podcast that allows you to be a fly on the wall during conversations with the world's leading wellbeing experts. I'm your host, Sarah Cunningham, and in today's episode, we'll meet an extraordinary leader who's been making strides when it comes to advancing workplace wellbeing, both in her own company and in other companies across the world, by putting people and purpose first. But before I introduce today's guest, I'd first like to say a word of thanks to our series sponsor, S&P Global. The world's leading organizations rely on S&P Global for the essential intelligence they need to make confident decisions. S&P Global, powering global markets. And speaking of S&P Global, we are honored to welcome their Chief Purpose Officer, Dimitra Manas, on today's episode. Dimitra wears multiple hats in her role as Chief Purpose Officer, overseeing people, marketing, corporate responsibility, as well as diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, and communications. And her leadership approach is driven by a people-first experience, which is music to my ears. So I'm really excited for this conversation and to dive into what that means. You are so welcome, Dimitra Manas.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, we're thrilled to have you here. You're actually the first Chief Purpose Officer we've had on this podcast. So we have interviewed a couple of Chief Wellbeing Officers, but I'd love to kick off by demystifying what your role is. So can you tell me, Dimitra, in a nutshell, what exactly is a Chief Purpose Officer?
It's a great question, Sarah. And look, I think it's really important. It's different at different companies now that Chief Purpose Officer titles are popping up everywhere. As you said, I'm responsible for the HR function, what we call the people function here at S&P Global, communications, marketing, corporate responsibility, and DEI. And I had this remit expanded in 2021. And really, we didn't know how to brand and bring the functions together. And so we thought about this, and one of my team members in our Singapore office came up with purpose, and it felt like a natural fit. So really what we're doing is aligning our company's purpose to accelerate progress with really having a force, a positive force, in fact, that is for our people, our customers, and our communities. So the way we look at this is very much around having an impact on those three key constituents: people, customers, and communities. And the work that we do and our work reflects our purpose and the impact that we're having on each other and the world.
It's so interesting. And of course, purpose itself is a really important word when we're discussing well-being, because if you look at the well-being literature, Aristotle and Aristotle's peers would have defined eudaimonic well-being as having a sense of meaning, having a sense of purpose behind our lives. So I think it's a really important word, actually. And I'm excited to dive into all of your achievements in your role. But before that, I'd actually like to step back in time a bit, because you've had an incredible career leading teams across multiple industries, not only working in S&P Global, but also major brands like Nike, Revlon, Estee Lauder. And I'm always really interested in the twists and turns in people's careers. So I wonder, were there any defining moments along your career path that led you to become a Chief Purpose Officer?
Well, I definitely had my number of twists and turns, to put it in your words. So I didn't have a career path that was linear. You know, my first ever job, actually, Sarah, was working in my father's bakery. Wow. You know, I started at the age of 12. So I started in banking in my corporate world and fell into HR. And, you know, I really felt like I was passionate about people, and HR was was really where I learned this, and I worked across the globe. I think one of the defining moments was definitely moving to Paris and really learning how to operate in a global scale and having a lot of, diversity of experience across industries. I've been blessed to work in different industry, different regions, and different roles. And I think that that experience has really helped me solve different challenges in different contexts. And that's why I really enjoy the role I'm having today, because it's quite diverse. It's a diverse role.
Amazing. And of course, central to your leadership approach is this people-first philosophy. Can you tell me a little bit more about where that philosophy evolved and how it's impacting on your company culture, your company operations, etc.?
Look, it's another great question, because it started as a grassroots movement, Sarah, based on input from our people. The inspiration, the ideas really come from our people. Their voices are what's really shaped our people first culture. And at its core, it's been about connecting and gathering feedback and listening and working together to find solutions that really make sense for our people. And we put our people first. It shows up in so many ways. In the last 6 years, we've changed policies, we've changed practices and approaches, and it's really a clear reminder of how doing right by our people is right for our business. It's become our mantra and the cornerstone of how we make decisions about our people. And we have different rollouts and different approaches that we change depending on what our people's needs are and whatever makes sense. And it's just been a fantastic grassroots movement for 6 years now, and we love it and we continue. We're up to our 11th approach right now and changes. So it's forever evolving and moving forward.
So you said the magic words there, Dimitra, and I'm grinning from ear to ear because you said it's about listening to our people. And that really is so important. And I feel if business leaders listening to this take anything away from the conversation, it's to involve employees, listen to employees' ideas, thoughts, fears, inputs. And that's really going to help you with shaping your people policies.
That's right.
But going back to all of those hats you wear, so you've got responsibility for steering the ship on people, marketing, corporate responsibility, communications, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. That's a lot of disparate organizational elements. How do you weave all of those together to create the people-first magic at S&P Global?
It is a bit of magic, Sarah, and I think well, as a purpose team, at the heart of our focus is really the company's purpose, how we accelerate progress. And, this idea of people first is a critical way that we deliver on that purpose. We come together to really enhance the experience for our people and for our customers and for the communities. And that enhancing that experience is that at the core. And while these functions do, seem separate or disparate, at first, there's a common thread, and our work actually really does reflect our purpose and our people-first philosophy to one another and to the world. And making that connection between our purpose, right, accelerating progress, and our day-to-day work reinforces a sense of accomplishment in the work we do.
The other thing that does strike me, though, it's not easy wearing multiple hats, and it's not easy leading teams across multiple geographies, multiple cultures, multiple time zones. And I've certainly struggled in the early part of my career with managing teams in different cultures, in different time zones, in different geographies. Do you have any tips for business leaders, for people leaders who are listening and who are struggling with the challenges of geographically disparate teams?
Well, it was worse when I lived in Australia, to be honest, Sarah. The time zone couldn't have been worse. So I've become very mindful and thoughtful because I experienced it firsthand when I lived in Australia and in Asia. You have to be mindful, right? You have to be thoughtful. We hold our key meetings twice. We hold one in the morning and one in the evening to accommodate different time zones. So executive, connect meetings, we call them ExCo Connect, and they are really held so that our people can join from different time zones. We have to educate ourselves on the differences. Because you don't want to be having a Friday meeting where it's Saturday in another country. It's just not appropriate. It's not fair. So you have to be sensitive, culturally and geographically sensitive. Ask questions and see what makes sense for people. You have to foster, in many ways, a flexible mindset and find that right balance between, collaborating and autonomous work. People should feel empowered to make the decisions on their own. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work for them, but they need to be actually feel comfortable and safe to tell you the time doesn't work. I think it's really important that we just be thoughtful, sensitive to other people. And I think when you have that at the heart of what you do, it doesn't, it really does help make the right decisions at all times. So you have to really just be, sensitive to people and their own needs.
You brought up something really important there as well, which is employees feeling safe to push back. And I suppose we define that as psychological safety. So in one of our previous episodes, we had Professor Amy Edmondson from Harvard, who's the leading authority on psychological safety globally. And it really is so important, because the reality is that when a voice is stifled, that's when trust and psychological safety erode. And I would say to anybody listening here today, if you feel that you can't be honest in your workplace, if you feel that you can't push back on an unreasonable timing for a meeting or an unreasonable request or just a bad decision, well, that's telling you don't have psychological safety. So you should probably do something with that. To business leaders, you need to be on the lookout if you feel that actually everybody is sort of agreeing all the time a little bit too much. That might be highlighting that there is an issue, because you actually need people to disagree and you need people to offer constructive criticism.
That's right. You need people to challenge you. You do. You definitely do.
And of course, it's another big driver of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And of course, that's another area that you have responsibility for. And I always feel belonging is particularly critical here. There's actually recent high-end research that shows that not only is belonging an often overlooked driver of our well-being at work, but actually when compared with other drivers, it has a disproportionately large impact on the way we feel about our work. So I'd love to hear from you some initiatives that you've done which have been successful in driving diversity, equity, inclusion, and critically, of course, belonging.
Creating a sense of belonging is definitely key and a priority for us here at S&P Global. And we've got many programs that support this as a priority. We have 9 PRGs. We call them people resource groups here at S&P, and they help foster a sense of belonging for all our people. And it's really an opportunity for people to meet from all parts of the world. They celebrate differences in perspectives, in backgrounds, in experiences, and they demonstrate how bringing the diverse aspects of ourselves to work really makes us all better. They really provide a major resource for people to help them with their unique needs and to again feel that they belong, that they're being heard. Because that's really the place where they're also heard. They're heard, with their people leader, but they're heard in their communities and their resource groups. And I get so much about out of it participating myself because it allows me to see the world from a different point of view. And we have also these amazing DEI speaker series, and they, we invite incredibly, diverse voices to engage with our people. Like they could be veterans, historians, professors, authors, actors. We've had, Dr. Bernice King. We've had Lisa Ling, who's you may know, she's an actress and a journalist. We've had Tova Friedman, a Holocaust survivor. We've had, so many different, people from different backgrounds, to sort of come and speak to us and inspire us. And we learn so much from these sessions because it really does help us understand, different perspectives and how people have experienced life. And it becomes a really important, impactful dialogue. And, we do lots of different initiatives. We have like a calendar where we have different themes and different promotions and, different topics, I should say, every month, so that we can again stimulate us and grow as leaders We have a ton of training for our people leaders to help them with empathy. That's important because empathy helps you also think differently, feel differently, and connect with people at an emotional level. And that helps. We've got a ton of things, Sarah. I mean, I could talk about even our reporting that holds us accountable. You know, we have a lot of external reporting. You know, our TCFD report, our impact report, our DI report, that absolutely holds us accountable. And that is really important for us to be transparent with ourselves and measure the impact that we're having.
It's wonderful to hear about all of these initiatives. And as you know, Demetra, I'm a huge champion of diversity, equity, inclusion and belonging myself. And as I listen to some of the things you say, you know, manage your training. What I love is that you talked about continuous training, because, of course, all of the research is now showing us that one and done actually changes very little. So it only becomes effective when it's sort of over a period of time and a continuous refreshment. The other thing, of course, you talked about is people resource groups, or in other companies, they might be known as employee resource groups. And these are so important because they bring diverse groups together. But the literature tells us a few things about them. One is they must have sponsorship and involvement at the most senior level. So that's why it really warmed my heart to hear you say that you were present in the room and that you are part of those communities. Of course, the other two things that the literature tells us is that these should be inclusive. So, in a previous organization, I was chair of our Women's Leadership Network. And on that committee, there were about eight people, of whom five were women and three were men. And that means that we're getting that diverse thought in. And all of the events, of course, open regardless of gender, because we have to learn from each other and we have to support each other. And I always give the example of I'm very proud, as an Irish woman, that Ireland in 2015 became the first country globally to legalize same-sex marriage by popular referendum. That would not have happened without the support of allies. And that, for me, is why it's so important that allies are in the room during, you know, these kind of conversations with employee resource groups. And the final point I'd share from the literature on this one is that actually those committee members, that their work is recognised, and perhaps even comes up in their performance review, because, of course, we're hearing now about invisible labour. So that's something that it sounds like in S&P Global, you're all over.
You know, we reward our people that actually run our PRGs. I think it's important that they're recognized and rewarded for the work they're doing. It's not invisible work at all. It's having a huge impact. So I think it's important.
That's wonderful. And that's absolutely best practice. Now, as a diversity, inclusion and belonging champion, you'll have heard, and most of our listeners will have heard that mantra, that diversity is being invited to the party and inclusion is being asked to dance. But what we now like to do within the group is we like to ask everyone to finish that mantra in your own way to account for the missing B, belonging. So how would you finish? Diversity is being invited to the party, inclusion is being asked to dance.
Well, this is very relevant because I'm also taking dancing classes right now with my husband. So belonging, I think, is dancing like no one is watching. Truly, you know, being yourself, empowered to show your true and unique colors is the way I would describe it. So belonging is dancing like no one is watching.
I think that's so important. I really, really do, that we can really be ourselves and bring our true selves to the workplace. And actually, when we're dancing in our own unique, quirky style, we might just find that there's other people dancing in a very similar, unique and quirky style that we gravitate towards. Well, that's wonderful. Dimitri, going back to your role, so you've been Chief Purpose Officer in S&P Global for about 6 years now, is that right?
That's right.
Looking back, what's your proudest achievement during that time?
Oh, this is a tough one. There's so many. Let me think. I think, Sarah, it has to be that I'm most proud of my team because they're truly incredible. They've made such a huge positive impact on the people in our company, and they deliver with such passion and professionalism. You know, each of them, does something uniquely different, right? They all have different jobs, they all have different ways in which they perform, but they're just incredible when they come together and they do incredible work. And I think the most, it has to be that I'm most proud of my team. And, we have truly amplified the culture of care and empathetic leadership to our people. And I think that that will continue. Our team just comes together beautifully. And like I said, they're all very unique, but there's a common thread between all of us. And we want to have a positive impact on our people, on our customers and our communities. And that's really at the heart of what we do. And I just feel very proud of what we've achieved.
And I'm sure your team are listening to this and they feel that appreciation. And I know I've been lucky enough, Demetra, to have a few conversations with you in the past. And I know that you really care about ensuring that your team feel appreciated and feel that kudos for the great work that they're doing. And again, that's such another key driver of employee well-being. So you're very much leading by example here. Now, you've had so many lessons and learnings and experiences over the years. If there are any business leaders listening today who are looking for advice for where to start when it comes to crafting a holistic workplace well-being strategy, what would your advice be for them?
You know, Sarah, we said it before when we highlighted it. You were kind enough to highlight it when I said it. And it's the, I think it, the first thing is listen to your people. I have to say that because it's so important. Ask the questions. You know, ask them what they need. Really listen to the answers. Listen to try and understand what their needs are as opposed to listening to respond to them. You know, I think our people first initiatives really started with that goal, to drive sort of a culture of inclusiveness and belonging and value. And, you want people to thrive at work, and that's important, So in order to do that, you have to listen. And so I think that that's the first thing I would say, just listen to your people. I think the second one would have to be integrate, your people's well-being into the decisions that you make, right? Our executive committee comes together regularly and we discuss benefits and progress and how we improve things, and we update our board of directors to make sure they understand the importance of our people's well-being. So it's really important that that's at the heart of the way you think about the impact you have on your people. And of course, because we're a data analytics company, we love to measure everything, right? It's really important to collect the data, and we do this through our roundtable discussions, our surveys. We monitor social media, so measure your progress so you can see how you're doing. And of course, holding yourself accountable as a leader is really important. You know, it stems from us, right? If we're really doing our job as leaders, that, we hold ourselves accountable, then we can measure the impact that we're having on our people. And I think that that's people first, is integrated into responsibilities of all our leaders here. And they're the ones who really create the real experience for our people day to day. You know, we could have the best benefits, the best policies and approaches, but their people day to day experience is felt through their people leader, their manager. So we have to also make sure that really develop your people leaders to be the best people leaders they can be, and support them and bring them, bring them along for the ride, but making sure that you hold them accountable, because that's really important. So, people bring an organization to life, and and if they're not cared for, they simply won't have that ability to do that, right? You know, they impact our people, impact our customers day to day. So you want to make sure that they're really the first people that you focus on, so that then our customers are treated extremely well by our people. And that has an impact, obviously, on then profits.
I mean, just so much incredibly helpful advice, in everything you said there. And I always say with this podcast series that success to me is that listeners will go away from every episode equipped with some actionable insights that they can put into practice. And I feel you've shared a few there. And you talked about the importance of both quantitative analysis, mm-hmm. i.e. measuring at scale, perhaps through a questionnaire, so you get big data, as it were, but also critically qualitative feedback, which is where you're hosting those focus groups, or as I used to like hosting when I was in the corporate world, listening lunches. So invite people along, offer them some free food, and create a casual atmosphere where people feel free to open up and share their thoughts. Both equally important. But I'd like to focus a little bit more now on the quantitative side of things, because certainly at the World Wellbeing Movement, you know, one of our key recommendations is we want to catalyze employers right across the world to start measuring employee wellbeing using science-based measures. And I know that S&P Global share this ambition. So for my next question, I'm afraid I'm going to break my own rule and I'm going to use a three-letter acronym, but I am going to explain it for listeners who are unfamiliar. So ESG reporting is asking organizations to report on the non-financial aspects of their business, such as environmental, social, and governance. So the investor community now expect most large companies to produce a report outlining the actions they're taking and the progress they're making on things like becoming eco-friendly, treating people right, and just managing your company effectively. And my understanding is that S&P Global have a tool that can help companies with this. And that tool is called your Corporate Sustainability Assessment, or your CSA. So a second three-letter acronym there. But what I think is really incredible is that you recently added a new section called Trends in Employee Wellbeing to that questionnaire. Can you tell me why this new Trends in Employee Wellbeing section is so important and how that can help catalyze thousands of companies across the world to effectively measure employee wellbeing?
Sarah, this is the exciting piece of the work that we do here. We incorporated the concept of employee wellbeing, as you said, into our corporate sustainability assessment in 2023. And, you know, we collaborated with the World Wellbeing Movement as the topic experts on the subject matter. And as you know, the research indicates there's a strong link between employee wellbeing and business outcomes, such as employee productivity, retention, performance of the company. So, you know, employee engagement, satisfaction, wellbeing surveys are sort of crucial tools for evaluating employee conditions. And these surveys sort of really contribute to developing policies that really help you get the best people and retain the best people in the company. And you can also identify areas of improvement. And that's, you know, we're seeing more and more companies address the core concepts of employee wellbeing within their surveys. And out of the companies that are conducting these, the most commonly included aspects of wellbeing capture sort of like job satisfaction, purpose, happiness, stress. And there's a saying that, as you know, what gets measured gets managed, right? And so we hope that including wellbeing as part of the survey metrics really brings this critical factor more to the forefront, right? As companies are sort of considering their overall business health, and that it, you know, that it motivates them to put people first too. That's really important.
I really like that phrase. What gets measured gets managed. It's so true. The minute you start measuring anything, you realize maybe how far you have to go to achieve what you want to achieve. So again, if there's a single message here from today's podcast for business leaders, it is to start measuring employee wellbeing. And if you want to know how, well, you can go to obviously S&P Global's Corporate Sustainability and look at that Trends in Employee Wellbeing section, or go to the World Wellbeing Movement's website, where we've created handy infographics outlining how to measure both how employees are feeling and why they're feeling that way. My hope, of course, is that all of this is going to change the future of work. So I'm now going to ask you to get your crystal ball out. And if you could step forward in time 20 or 30 years, what change do you envision in the future of work, particularly when it comes to employee well-being?
Well, I won't be working in 20 to 30 years from now, but I do hope it changes in a positive way for my children and for the next generation. We've seen a shift, as you know, in recent years to the idea of leading with purpose. And I think lots of research out there from Deloitte, from McKinsey, and one piece I remember is that, you know, 70% of people say they define their purpose through their work. And so people want that connection. I just think that will keep going up. I think it'll end up being 100%. I just don't think it'll sit at 70. I think it's something that we take seriously here as a purpose-led organization rooted in and driven by our values. And I think we'll see more and more organizations incorporate purpose in similar ways. So my hope is that this future of work will be much more human-centric. It really took a bit of a swing in the pendulum in the last 30 years, and I think we want to make sure that it continues to focus purpose-driven, human-centric, and advances like technology and Gen AI. I think it'll be even more important. The human touch is even more crucial. Because you've heard, I don't know if you've heard the term, Sarah, but, you know, softer skills now are power skills. So, you know, they're no longer seen as softer skills. So emotional intelligence, EQ, clear communication, adapting to different environments. I think that they're going to be even more important because you won't be able to lead in 20 years from now without those skills. And I think it'll set leaders apart and drive organizational success. So I'm hoping that we see it is much more amplified 20 to 30 years from now, and that it's 100% across companies. That's what I'd love to see.
And how wonderful to hear you describe soft skills as power skills, because it's a phrase that I've always, to be honest, despised, calling something so important soft. It's sort of a contradiction in terms. These are foundational skills. Having empathy, leading with decency and kindness. We had a wonderful interview with Dr. Kelly Harding in season one, where she talked about the importance of bringing compassion and kindness to the workplace, and actually how that can have positive impacts on both our physical and mental health. So I find that fascinating, and I know a lot of listeners will too, as you mentioned, you know, generative AI, and as that is becoming more and more advanced, actually our uniquely human skills are really essential skills, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Which brings us to each and every one of us, because we've talked a little bit about your advice for business leaders, but not all of our listeners are business leaders. But most of us will either be in a workplace at this stage, or, you know, even if you're between jobs, you're thinking about your next move. What advice would you have for each and every individual to help contribute to your vision of a better future of work?
Look, you have to take care of yourself, right, Sarah? That's important, that we take time out for ourselves and that you do whatever recharges you, you know, yoga or prayer or taking a walk or whatever it might be, going away. You have to take care of yourself. That's really important. And I think that's, we have our policy here is called recharge, which is, you know, taking leave to recharge yourself. It's important not just to take leave. It's got a purpose to recharge yourself. So I think that is the number one thing you have to do. Obviously, setting boundaries, something that took me a long time to actually do myself, but it's challenging, but you have to do them. You have to set them so that you can actually stop and have that time to recharge and reflect. And just take take advantage of the benefits that you have as a company. Make sure that you're familiar with your company's offerings. And if they're not there, be the champion, you know, for them and for the change in your company. I think, again, it's the voices, and the more you actually speak up, the more you can help yourself and help others around you.
Such wise words. So on the self-care topic, you have an incredibly demanding job. It's a global job. We've talked about all the disparate functions within your organization that you have responsibility for. How do you put your own life jacket on first? What do you do to look after your own well-being?
Look, Sarah, to be honest, I start my day with prayer and I end my day in prayer. And sometimes when I'm in the office, I even shut my office door and pray in between meetings. I think that's really important for me. My spiritual, personal, my spiritual growth is really important to me, and just connecting. So everyone has a different, you know, some people meditate, I pray. I think I'm also an avid reader. I love reading lots of research reports and findings, and love doing the analysis, and love being able to be, you know, at the forefront. And I do a lot of reading, just and it's not fictional, right? It's you know, I read biographies and I read research reports and leadership books. And I think that's, I just find that really stimulating. But I think if I'm really honest, I just love sitting on my couch, and it's my life jacket. I love sitting on my couch and just relaxing, put my feet up and read. And of course, spending time with my husband and my kids. I think that to me is the simple pleasures of life that I love more than anything. And that gives me a lot of personal satisfaction, and it really just helps me recenter. It helps me look after myself. You know, I know when I'm off track, it's because I've probably not prayed enough, or I've not spent time with my family, and I've just work, and something's off. And I think it's you know, just reset. Just pick yourself up and reset. And that's what I do.
And thank you, Dimitra, for sharing that, because what I adore about your answer is you gave us the well-rounded view. So you're reading and that's helping you. And I want to hear a little bit about that. And for you, it's prayer. For other people, it'll be meditation. And, you know, you've talked about, you know, various exercise classes, relaxation classes. But you also said, and I think this is really important, that you enjoy just sitting on your couch and relaxing. And it's okay for us to do that. Yes, it's important to be out in nature. And yes, of course, it's important to be spending time with family. But we're all human. We all need time to decompress. And it's okay to take a little bit of time out. And whether you're relaxing, reading a book, reading a magazine, having a cuppa, having a chat, or binge watching something on Netflix, if that helps you to unwind and decompress, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, I would like to go to what I like to call the rapid fire round. And you have preempted the first question. So the first question is going to be, if you had to recommend one book to our listeners that has greatly influenced your perspective on well-being, what would that book be?
Oh, rapid fire. I think Hubert Joly's book on purpose is really critical. I think it gets you to really reflect and stop and think about yourself, and it does help your well-being. Even though it's not about necessarily your well-being, it is just by purely being centered around purpose. So I think Hubert Joly's book would definitely have to be my number one recommendation.
So next question: if you were to create a well-being themed playlist, what song would be the first track?
Oof, what song? Okay, you may not know any of these songs, but they're beautiful Byzantine chanting from Byzantine choirs around the globe. I love listening to them. They're medicinal. They help you meditate. They help you get into a state of relaxation, and I just love the chanting. So that is not your everyday music, but for me it is. I start listening to Byzantine chants. I just think it's just so soothing and nourishing for my soul and for my heart. I just love it.
How wonderful. I'm going to be straight onto Spotify tonight looking that up. So on to the next question. If you had a time machine and could travel back in time, what advice would you give to your 21-year-old self?
Oh, don't stress. Definitely don't stress about things. Things fall into place and it's all fine. It all works out in the end. So I think that definitely would have been good advice for me back then.
Well, I think that's good advice for everybody. And it's good advice for me at every age. I think, although we know it, we need to be reminded at stages. And the final question, what do you think is key to living a good life?
Well, I think it's taking care of yourself mentally, right? Spiritually and physically. I think you have to have all of those things working in sync, and not ignoring one or the other, like really looking at them more holistically and think about the whole person, not just, you know, we talk a lot about mental health right now. It's not just mental health. It's everything. It's the physical, it's the mental, it is the spiritual. And I think when those three things work, then you're in for a good ride and a good, healthy life.
And what wise words, what the perfect place to finish this podcast. Dimitra Manas, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah. It's always good to see you. Thanks so much for having me.
You're so welcome.